open Fresh Air today with a 1932 recording, Count Basie at the piano with Benny Moten's band, and that was called Lafayette. Today on Fresh Air at 4 o'clock, we'll be joined by Tom Shales, who's National Public Radio's film critic and the Washington Post's television critic. A collection of Shales' TV columns has just been published under the title On the Air. We'll talk about TV and movies when Tom Shales joins us at 4. At 3:30, we'll hear this week's edition of Hearing Secret Harmonies with rock critic Ken Tucker. Today, a review of some new records. Stories for Free Children, a feature of Ms. Magazine, are stories that don't contain any sexist or racist stereotypes. Letty Cotton Pogrebin has collected the best of these stories into a new book called Stories for Free Children. She'll be with us at about 2:45 or 3 o'clock. With me now is Winnie Winston, who I'm sure many of our listeners know is a pedal steel guitar player who has recorded under his own name and as a sideman with Steve Goodman, David Bromberg, Rosalie Sorrells, and many others. Winnie builds his own instruments and is also an associate professor of design at the Philadelphia College of Art. In the past few years, he's been studying and now teaching homeopathic medicine, and that's what we're going to talk about today. Homeopathy was developed about 170 years ago by Dr. Samuel Hahnemann, after whom Hahnemann Hospital in Philadelphia is named. And the goal of homeopathy is to treat the person rather than the disease, and natural medicines are used to stimulate a person to heal themselves. Winnie Winston's first involvement with homeopathy was as a patient, and since that time he's done considerable research. He spent his sabbatical from PCA last year traveling around the country meeting with and interviewing homeopathic doctors. He's currently on the board of directors of the National Center for Homeopathy and serves on the editorial advisory board of the Journal of the American Institute of Homeopathy. He's the registrar of the National Center for Instruction in Homeopathy, which is located in Millersville, Pennsylvania, and he's also on the faculty at that center where he teaches a lay introduction, pharmacy, and a history of homeopathy course. Winnie is, by the way, his nickname, and Julian is his given name and the name that most of his homeopathic colleagues know him by. Winnie Winston, welcome back to Fresh Air, and it's great to see you again.
Thank you, Terry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Since most of our listeners do know you as a pedal steel guitarist, aside from your students who know you as a teacher from design, how did you get into homeopathy?
A long series of unrelated events, which somebody suggested at one point that I see their doctor when I first came to Philadelphia. And he was an old man who was down in South Philly on Porter Street. And it turns out that he was a homeopathic doctor. I didn't know from one doctor from another doctor. And I went, and he made me better, and I went back, and he helped me with another problem. And realized that it was not regular medicine and that I was really benefiting by it. And when he retired, I decided to learn more about it because I really wanted to keep in touch with it. Just about the time he retired, I had a really bad, shall we say, allopathic experience in the hospital with an operation. And I swore that I would never subject myself to that again and really wanted to learn as much as I could and establish contact with the homeopathic community so I could keep myself in good health.
So it was a combination of homeopathy working for the problems you had and the allopathic medicine doing what, hurting you?
It was rather unpleasant. Mm-hmm. And after I got out, I got back in touch with the old man who had turned me on to all this. I found out that he was still alive and retired in New Jersey. And he assured me that I probably could have saved the operation. Because I had a kidney stone, and he probably could have gotten it to move homeopathically. So I decided to learn more about it.
So what are the basic principles of homeopathic medicine?
Samuel Hahnemann, who was a German physician of the middle 1700s, early 1800s, came upon the idea while translating a book about drugs of the time that the actual translation was that the William Cullen had said that quinine was capable of curing malaria because it was bitter tasting, and Hahnemann took exception to that. And for whatever reasons there were, Hahnemann took a large dosage of quinine and found out that he seemed to get the symptomology of the intermittent fever. After much experimentation, he came up with the idea that the reason substances are capable of curing certain illnesses is because they are capable of causing similar symptoms in healthy people. We are not talking about causing the disease in healthy people. We are talking about causing similar symptoms. One of his first discoveries was that the poisoning qualities of the belladonna plant cause very similar symptoms to those of scarlet fever. And he used that rather successfully at the turn of the 1800s to turn of the 1700s into the 1800s to cure many cases of belladonna. So the basic principle of homeopathy is that it's the Latin motto is similia similibus curantur, which basically says let like things be cured by like things. That's the basis of it. And it's a system by which the drugs which are used, which are called remedies, are tested on healthy people, usually volunteers. Many of the original testings or provings, as they're called, were done by doctors on themselves. And the symptoms are written down. The poisoning symptoms of these substances are written down. And the drugs are prescribed on the basis of the similarity of the illness to the picture which the drug can produce in a healthy person.
So the idea also is to stimulate the body to heal itself.
Yeah, the biggest question which always comes up is, well, how does it work? And the answer is generally, we can theorize all we want, but the reality is that we do not know how it works. Empirically, it works. There's 180 years of use of homeopathic medicines, and most doctors who have tried them find that they work. They don't quite understand why or how. Seems to be involved with the energy field, which is the same energy field which the acupuncturists are talking about. They call it chi, and the Indians call it prana. And there's an energy field seen around the body which these remedies can stimulate. And they don't know how it's done. Richard Grossinger, in a book called Planet Medicine, was very beautiful in his statement that homeopathy made perfect sense to the 18th and 19th century mind and will undoubtedly make perfect sense to the 22nd century mind. But at this point in time, it's really at a totally opposite end of the spectrum of thought and understanding than what we are used to dealing with. And the question is, do you want to use it without knowing how it works? I mean, they don't know how electricity works either. You know, they don't really know what gravity is. They have theories. And even within medicine, they are finding out that the mechanism which they thought certain things worked with are not there are other mechanisms. So homeopathy avoids the issue of how does it work by saying we are not going to even bother trying to figure out how it works, because that's delving into an area which we shouldn't really bother with. What Hahnemann said in his first paragraph of the book The Organon of Rational Healing, which he wrote, was that the doctor's prime purpose is to cure and not to speculate on the nature of disease.
Does that bother you as both a teacher and a user of homeopathic medicine, that you don't really understand how it works and that the doctors you go to don't really understand how it works?
No, it doesn't bother me at all. It's a system. It's a logical system. It has rules. The remedies are given according to certain rules, and it seems to work.
So what are the remedies made from?
Almost anything. animal matter, plant matter, mineral matter. You can take minerals like sulfur and phosphorus and mercury, compounds like ferrum phosphoricum, iron phosphate, the ammonia compounds, plants like belladonna, poison ivy, daisies, sunflowers, oak, acorns, plant material like venom of bees, venom of snakes. There's a wonderful remedy, Mephites, which is skunk.
The old expression when you want to put down someone who's a kind of con medical person to say, oh, they just give you snake venom. So what's it like when you tell people that snake venom is, in fact, one of the remedies in the homeopathic pharmacopoeia?
The doctors I know who tell the people what they're giving them feel it's rather sporting to tell them that they're giving them a really heavy poison like snake venom or arsenic. Don't like to tell them that they're giving them something as plebeian as chamomile. I think that the most important thing about homeopathic pharmacy is that there are many substances which are basically neutral substances which, when prepared according to the homeopathic pharmacopoeia, do have quite a good use. And I'm talking about things like table salt, natrum muriaticum, the lycopodium spores, which are considered to be absolutely neutral in any under any conditions. Let me think of I can't think. There are many others. Carbo vegetabilis, which is animal vegetable charcoal, an animal charcoal, which when prepared homeopathically, proved to be very curative of a lot of ailments.
I'm going to reintroduce you for our listeners just joining us. I'm speaking with Winnie Winston, who's also known as Julian Winston. And in the past, Winnie's talked to us on Fresh Air about his music. He's a pedal steel guitar player and an associate professor of design at the Philadelphia College of Art. But for the past couple of years, he's been teaching homeopathy. He's been studying it for several years, and he teaches at the Institute in Millersville, Pennsylvania, and is on the board of the Journal of the American Institute of Homeopathy. So if you're having a problem and you go to see a homeopathic doctor, mm-hmm. would you compare what that visit would be like and what that homeopathic doctor would look for
yes.
with what
yeah.
regular okay. physician would
well,
look for?
Well, usually a regular physician, even in the little book on bedside diagnosis, which most physicians get as students and written by DeGowan and DeGowan, mention that there are two kinds of symptoms. There's a subjective symptom which the patient tells the doctor and an objective symptom which the doctor sees. And DeGowan and DeGowan points out that the subjective symptoms are secondary in importance to the objective symptoms. So when you go to a regular doctor, let's say you go to a doctor with a sore throat, a very simple acute ailment. A regular doctor will look in the throat and decide whether it looks like it's strep or not, and then give you a antibiotic based on the idea that it might be a strep infection. Might give you an antibiotic even though he doesn't think it's a strep infection, in which if it was a viral infection, antibiotics aren't going to help, but they give them anyway, or some doctors do. And tries the remedy, the drug he knows, which might help a sore throat. Doesn't ask you very much about it because all you say is you have a sore throat and the doctor looks and the throat is definitely red. A homeopathic doctor looks for many other things and wants to know many other things. In looking at the throat, he will look for the color of it, and if one side is redder than another side, then he will ask questions. does it hurt more when you swallow empty or when you swallow liquids? Do liquids hurt more than empty swallowing? When does the throat hurt? Does drinking hot things help it or hurt it? Does it feel bad to put your hand on it, or does pressure on your throat help? Did it seem to start on one side or the other side? Did it start in the morning when you woke up? Did you go to sleep healthy and wake up with a sore throat? Because each of those little subtle differences make up a picture of a completely different remedy. And what he's looking for is the specific picture of the sore throat which you have, not the sore throat as an entity. But he's looking at how you are affected by the sore throat, including whether you feel hot or cold, whether you have anything else going on in your body, whether you feel dizzy, whether your eyes hurt, whether it stitches into your ear when you swallow. All of this information to a homeopathic doctor means something, because it's a way of figuring out what the remedy is which he will give. To an allopathic doctor, that information is not particularly important.
Are there times that even a homeopathic doctor would give an antibiotic because an infection is has progressed to a point where it needs immediate attention, or it might be getting out of hand?
It depends on how good the homeopathic doctor is and how good the homeopathic doctor feels about himself. Most doctors who are basically homeopathic doctors have to be allopathic doctors to begin with, because in order to practice homeopathy formally, generally in most states, you have to be a medical doctor. And that homeopathy is seen as a graduate study. So since most doctors these days are trained with the use of antibiotics, at some point the doctor, well, I know for, Dr. Moskowitz from New Mexico, who was my doctor for a while, said that early in his career he had several times when he saw a really very virulent infection and panicked and didn't think that he could trust homeopathy with it and gave antibiotics. He says he doesn't think that in two of those cases he's quite sure he wouldn't do that today, because he's been doing it for a longer time and really knows the remedies. In one of those cases, he says it was such a bad infection, he says he has a feeling that he might have still done it. The old-time homeopaths, of course, didn't know about antibiotics, so you worked without them and had results.
Well, you spent your year sabbatical from PCA traveling around the country, interviewing and meeting with homeopathic doctors. Mm-hmm. What are some of the differences now between the younger doctors who are homeopaths and the oldest generation who is on the verge of retirement now?
The oldest generation are really wonderful doctors. Homeopathy is a lifelong study. You never stop learning. It's a study of people, and it's a study of remedies. And therefore, the older doctors usually continue practicing right up until they either can't do it anymore and just collapse, or just practice and go to sleep one night and die. There's very few doctors in the middle, because the homeopathy really died out in this country for a while. The younger doctors generally have pretty good training but don't have the background, because there's nobody to work with as a preceptor. It's very hard to find an old doctor to work with now. So the younger doctors are really back where it was in 1840, having to learn it all over again. I think that the next generation of doctors will probably benefit greatly by what the doctors now are learning, but we don't have enough old doctors for the young doctors to really learn a lot from. So it's most of the information is coming out of journals and books, and the young doctors are really struggling. But the young doctors who are doing it are really dedicated to it.
What are some of the reasons that you were given by the young doctors who you spoke to about why they started studying this?
The same reasons which Hahnemann had for leaving the medical fold. They felt they weren't helping people. They felt that they really did not have a systematized knowledge, that they were being told to do things because that's the way it is, and that 2 years later there's a new drug on the market and that the old drug is no longer the right one, and that just because they gave it 2 years ago doesn't mean that it's the right one now, and that they have a real deep inner feeling of not being able to help people and really see that. And in investigating homeopathy, found that they were getting better results than they were with their regular practice. I know Dr. Moskowitz said his first move out of allopathic medicine was to start doing home deliveries, because he said he would rather help people in than help people out. And that got him into acupuncture, which started to talk about energy systems, and that got him into homeopathy, and now he's doing homeopathy exclusively. Many of the young doctors are working in emergency wards, not as homeopaths, but just as in emergency wards, feeling that their background in medicine, they can at least be helpful in an emergency ward, which is a really mechanical, manipulative skill. And they will compromise on that level, but they do not want to deal with chronic problems outside of homeopathy, because homeopathy has a whole series of shall we say laws which talk about chronic disease and the progression of chronic disease, and they follow them, and they don't want to get involved in dealing with chronic disease if they're not going to be doing homeopathy.
Well, you've mentioned acupuncture a couple of times. What are some of the similarities between the homeopathic and the acupuncturist's view of the body and symptoms?
Well, some acupuncturists are basically palliative acupuncturists. A lot of doctors are thrilled with acupuncture because it seems to be able to shut off pain. And everybody's looking for ways of getting rid of pain. So you have a back pain and you go to a regular run-of-the-mill acupuncturist, and the acupuncturist basically shuts off the pain for you. It's like taking aspirin, but all the acupuncturist does is it shuts off the pain. It comes back in a month, and you go back for another bunch of needles. That is not cure. That is palliation. Those acupuncturists are not really treating a sick person. The real classical acupuncturists will look at the whole person and decide how to, by the application of the needles, rearrange the energy field of that person. They have the same laws in that the acupuncturist, as the homeopath, believes that you will know that a cure is happening because the symptomology will go from the more interior to the more exterior, or let's say a person's mental depression will go away and they might get a skin problem. That means that the person is getting better, that the illness might go away from the top down. In other words, a bad congestive lung problem might go away, and the next problem the person comes in with might be a bladder infection. That's moving from above to below. But the most interesting one, which the acupuncturists deal with and the homeopaths do also, is that the disease goes out in the reverse order that it comes in that a person going to either an acupuncturist or a homeopath and accepting treatment will find that a very, very common thing is the person comes in for a second visit and says, you know, doctor, my whatever is much better, but I now have this pain in my knees, which I haven't had since I was
a teenager, and it was treated at that time and went away and was made to go away. That old ailments will return, and to a homeopath and to an acupuncturist, the thinking is that the supposed cure of that old ailment was not a cure but a suppression, that all that happened is the symptoms left the body surface and became more internal, leading to other problems. And a very, very common line which homeopaths and acupuncturists see would be from eczema as a child to asthma as a teenager to colitis as a young adult to arthritis. It's a very, very common series. And in each case, as an allopathic doctor handles it, when the eczema is gone, the dermatologist considers that the person is cured. When the asthma is gone, that doctor considers the person is cured. And nowhere do they see that it is going in, as the homeopath would say, or the acupuncturist would say, is going inward instead of coming outward. And that person is not getting better, but is getting sicker.
When you look at the body and illness in that way, it's you're kind of looking at a problem as being the kind of physical manifestation of somebody's maybe psychological problems, mm-hmm. or coping or emotional problems.
Well, the homeopaths and classical acupuncturists do not have any separation between mental, emotional, and physical, that you have to look at the whole person, and that mental problems are just as much part of what's wrong with the person, of the illness of the person, as a physical manifestation. Many of the doctors I've spoken to say that the best results they get are from patients who come to them and say, "I know I'm sick, but I've been through $3,000 of testing and they can't find anything wrong." I mean, when you get that situation, what you have is you have a person who knows that there's something wrong, but the illness has not manifested itself on a pathological basis yet. The regular approach would be wait until something comes up. So you wait a year or two, and eventually a test will show that there's something wrong. But that person knows that they are sick, and if they go to a homeopath, the homeopath will be able to treat them because they have a lot of symptoms. It's nothing pathological yet, but it's all there.
Well, what about the argument that if you come down with something, that it's kind of normal that all bodies have their more vulnerable points,
mm-hmm.
just like, well, this is a very mechanical analogy, but just like every car, some engines are better than other, and some brake systems work better mm-hmm. than other. Everybody's built differently, and everybody's got its weak points, and if you're exposed to a virus or bacteria or something, chances are you'll get it. What about that more kind of matter-of-fact approach to things?
The homeopathic view is generally the real classical homeopathic view is that healthy people do not get sick, and that the viruses and the bacteria are all around, and someone always survives plague. If you look for reasons, you might be able to find it in the immune system, and you can spend a lot of money going deeper and deeper into the thing and looking for it. But that is of no interest to a homeopath, because that is theoretical. You are looking for why this is happening. The reality, the empiric reality, is that some people get sick and some people don't. And different people have weak spots. That the homeopath would say and has said that the person who has pneumonia is not sick because they have pneumonia. They have pneumonia because they are sick. They get sick first, then the pneumococcus comes in, because the pneumococcus can grow only in ill tissue, and that if you can make the person well, the pneumococcus will leave. And that's what homeopathy tries doing. It doesn't try getting rid of the pneumococcus.
A lot of people who started off with different psychological approaches to emotional problems, and I'm thinking here especially of, I guess, the more Freudian kind of approach, got disenchanted with it, feeling that every small problem that would come up in life would be connected to, you know, like what happens when you were young and what your father was like and your relationship with your mother, and that at some point to some people that becomes too much and exasperating and really stretching sometimes for connections. Do you ever feel that way about homeopathy?
No. There's a really good definition of health, which a Greek homeopath named George Vesoukas, who's the real leader in some ways of the field these days, has come up with, and that is health is freedom. And it's freedom from physical problems, and it's freedom from mental problems, and it's freedom from emotional problems. There is nothing wrong with going to a movie and getting emotionally involved and crying when the heroine dies or whatever. That's a good, healthy, emotional time. There would be something very wrong if you stayed crying for the next 3 months. Every time you thought about it, you would cry. That is not healthy. There is nothing wrong with not being able to concentrate when you're tired. But if you can't concentrate all the time, or if you have paranoid delusions, if you think people are out to get you, and it's hindering your functioning, then that is ill. And if you can't sit in a room where there's a draft, that is a problem. I mean, a healthy person should be able to go out in the cold and come into the hot and have drafts and have odors and eat anything and deal with it. And that if the amount of health which a person has can be seen in terms of how limited they are, which is a good definition.
Let me reintroduce you. Winnie Winston's my guest. And he's known, I'm sure, to many of our listeners as a pedal steel guitar player. He's an associate professor of design at PCA. We're talking about his homeopathy work. He teaches at the Institute for Homeopathy in Millersville, Pennsylvania, and he's also on the board of directors of the National Center for Homeopathy. Listeners may be wondering why there are no homeopaths or why there are so few homeopaths now. What happened during that period when it was founded and flourished, and now where there's only very old and very young homeopathic doctors?
It's interesting that we can only talk about this country, that what happened in this country is unique in the history of homeopathy, because homeopathy is flourishing in England. The Queen's doctor is a homeopath. The Queen carries her little homeopathic kit with her. There are lay practitioners who have clinics in England. It is not only the domain of the doctor. There are homeopathic hospitals in Germany. I gathered from speaking to a researcher that there are several in Russia. Homeopathy, there are, I think, 400 homeopathic hospitals and about 100 homeopathic teaching schools in India. There are 3 in Mexico, 2 in Argentina, 1 in Brazil. It's a very common medical specialty. In this country, it was subject to intense pressure by the AMA. And it's interesting that the AMA was founded in 1847, which was 3 years after the American Institute of Homeopathy was formed. And it was founded primarily as a reaction against the idiocy, as they felt it was, of homeopathy, that they rebelled against it because they felt it didn't make any sense. But I gathered from the readings I've done that one of the real major reasons of them rebelling against it is that the homeopathic doctors were getting not only cures but were making money.
So you think this hurt is competition?
Definitely. Definitely. And the literature bears it out. There were points at which you would see an ad in a newspaper for a regular medical practice, which was up for sale in a town, and the doctor was asking $1,000 for the practice. and you see an ad in a similar town for a homeopathic doctor, and the doctor's asking $5,000 for the practice. What happened to it in this country is that the American Medical Association got very large due to a lot of help from drug companies after the Civil War. And several other things started to happen. The population became very mobile. It's very hard for a homeopath to deal with a mobile population.
Why?
Because you really want to have a continuity. You want to know what you've given the person, what that last person has given the person, what the person's parents are about. It's really family practice. Also, the germ theory came out of late 1800s. Aspirin came out, and it's much easier to take an aspirin to make the headache go away than to try to figure out which is the proper remedy for that specific headache. By the turn of the century, homeopathic practice was 100 years old in this country, roughly. And it was looked at as old stuff. We are now in the 20th century. We have electric lights. We have automobiles. We are modern. We're going to do it modern. We're going to be not old-fashioned like grandma was. There was a great deal of difficulty within the homeopathic movement because, okay, if you have a remedy which is good for beginning of colds which come on with great anxiety, and you have a remedy for colds which come on very slowly with aching in the joints, and you have a remedy for colds which come on slowly with aching in the muscles and droopy eyes, and you have a remedy for colds which come on pretty rapidly with great onset of runny nose. Somebody came along and said, why don't we put all five of those remedies in one thing and label it colds? So when you come into the doctor and say, I have a cold, he gives you that instead of trying to find the one. The real classicists balked at that. And the movement split into, what they called the high potency school and the low potency school. Also, a lot of homeopathic remedies were taken over, not in homeopathic terms, but were taken over by regular medical practice. Witch hazel for the treatment of venous congestion and piles, glonalin, which is nitroglycerin for angina. And by the turn of the century, it was a very, very mixed bag. There were only a few, maybe 200, real stalwart homeopathic holdouts. Then Carnegie and Rockefeller decided to give their money to medical schools and wanted to know who to give it to. The Flexner Commission was set up, and the Flexner Report basically did not give the homeopathic schools very good reviews because they felt that it was a very allopathic view of what a medical school should be. The licensing, which then took place, said that a person could only take the state exam to become a doctor if they graduated from an approved school. Didn't matter how you could do on the exam, it mattered what school you graduated from. And by 1925, only four homeopathic schools were left in the country. Hahnemann here, Hahnemann in Chicago, Hahnemann in San Francisco, and Flower Fifth in New York. And most of them had gotten by because they were very allopathic in their approaches. So the whole thing just died out. And if it wasn't for a few old doctors who carried it on and a few young doctors being interested, we really have almost nobody here.
So what kind of network is there now?
The National Center for Homeopathy is a network of lay people and doctors. We're based in Washington, D.C. The American Institute of Homeopathy, which was founded in 1844, is still going as a network of doctors and growing. The International Foundation for Homeopathy, which is based out in California with offices in Greece, is offering courses for doctors, and they're very intense 6-month courses. Our latest journal had, I think, about 200 homeopathic doctors listed in it, which is about where we were at the turn of the century.
How has your involvement in this changed your own outlook on health or your own personal habits, eating habits?
Well, my involvement is really in that I don't treat myself. I have a homeopathic first aid kit, and I use it whenever need be, but we understand that by first aid we mean first aid. Cuts, bruises, insect bites, things like that. I have enough remedies to get me over any acute ailment or any of my friends over any acute ailments, upset stomachs, colds, flus, things like that. But I don't treat myself on real deep levels because I don't think that anybody is capable of really seeing themselves. So I go to a doctor. And the doctor determines after talking to me that I would – my entire picture – I'm not really not healthy, but I'm not really healthy. So I go to the doctor and he gives me a remedy and we see what happens. The upshot of what happens is that 2 years ago after receiving a remedy for the first time, I was filling out an application for something and it had squares to check what your condition of health was, and I checked excellent. And that was the first time in my life I've ever checked excellent. And I checked it excellent because I felt that I was in excellent health. And that, when I told my doctor, he says, when you stop feeling in excellent health, call me up again and we'll see what we can do for you. Because what the remedy did was it got me to feel well. What it's done for me is it's gotten me to understand what other people are about. It's opened my eyes to looking at other people, to understanding, you know, what their problems are. It sensitized me a great deal.
What's the homeopathic view of diet nutritional therapy? And what do you think the nutritional therapists think of homeopathy?
A lot of nutritional therapists don't know anything about homeopathy. If you are very healthy, you should be able to eat anything. Nutritional therapy at this point in time I think is very important because most people are not getting what they really need in their food. I mean, it's not the turn of the century. So it would be very good to go on some nutritional program. The only thing is that most of the homeopathic doctors I know would say that if they see a patient coming in who's taking a lot of megavitamins and is eating a specific, very limited diet, and if they go off that regimen, they start not to feel well, they will ask them to go off the regimen so they can get a very clear picture of what the person's health is really like without all of the additives, because vitamin C might prevent colds, but it will never cure. What you're looking for is a cure, and that's what homeopathy offers. So all of the vitamins and nutritional things are very important if you want to keep the body in good shape, but sometimes that alone will not do it.
I'm not going to ask you to recommend any names here, but since you've discussed the difficulty in finding homeopathic doctors, how would someone who's interested find out who they are or where they are?
The National Center for Homeopathy in Washington, D.C. Has a listing of doctors, and if you call them, they will give you names in the area. You have to then figure out whether they are good homeopathic doctors or not. The use of homeopathic remedies does not mean that the doctor is a homeopathic doctor. Just because you can go into a health food store and buy a remedy which says homeopathic for colds and then take it does not mean you're taking a homeopathic remedy. It is homeopathic only if it is homeopathic, similar pathos to the symptoms you have. There are many doctors who say that they're homeopaths who are not. who truly think that they are. I would think that most of the doctors who are trained at the Millersville program, which is run by the National Center or the International Foundation for Homeopathy, are very good homeopathic doctors.
Okay, well, I want to thank you a lot for telling us about homeopathy. Winnie Winston's been my guest. Thanks for being here, Winnie.
Oh, it's great.
And Winnie is a pedal steel guitar player and also a professor, associate professor of design at the Philadelphia College of Art. He's also very involved in homeopathy. He's on the board of directors of the National Center for Homeopathy, serves on the editorial advisory board of the Journal of the American Institute of Homeopathy, and he's the registrar of the National Center for Instruction in Homeopathy in Millersville, Pennsylvania. And he's also on the faculty there where he teaches courses. He teaches a lay introduction, a course in pharmacy, and a history of homeopathy class. Well, coming up in just a couple of minutes, Letty Cotton Pogrebin will be with us to talk about stories for free children. And at 4 o'clock, Tom Shales, NPR's film critic and the Washington Post television critic, will be with us. Before we meet Letty Cotton Pogrebin, let's listen to...